These are my words, Mother.
Come on, you douchebags! We're all on the same team!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first Friday Filibuster of 2014, and it is also our annual year-end award show, The Busters, and Matt McIntyre. We've been at this for a couple years, but if we had a live studio audience, they surely would be applauding right now, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Everybody decked out in their tuxes.
Decked out in the seat fillers would be everywhere. So,
that's right.
But what is this, our fourth annual Busters?
I think so.
Fourth? That's it? There's got to be more than that.
I don't know. I mean,
no?
I mean, Mac, it was just me and you. We kicked it off a while ago, and then we kind of grew it, right? So.
Right. Oh, maybe it's been longer than that. That would have been the type of thing to look up beforehand.
That's correct, if we did show prep. So that's one thing that's never changed over the years. No one does any of the show prep. But anyway, this is our Friday Filibuster year-end awards. What we've done is we have several categories, many that you'll recognize from years past. There's some depth, there's some mainstays for sure. But we've got some new ones tossed in as well. Thankfully, they were given out by our guests, a co-host, I guess. I guess this is one giant co-hosting affair. So much like the Ring Bearer in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, if you were on the Friday Filibuster at some time this year, you got tagged to be on this podcast. So Eric Astroslager is here.
Hi.
Hi, yes. Jason Pinella is here. It's his second time, but he got it just in 2013, right in the nick of time.
I planned that perfectly.
Perfectly. Mac, of course.
Hack-a-do.
Daryl is here.
Hi.
And our buddy Matt Farley.
It's an honor.
We're glad to have you aboard. So, yeah, six of us. It's going to be kind of controlled tomfoolery, but I think we'll have a good time, and we're just going to get right to it here. So, like I said, we've got a bunch of categories. We've each this isn't an ambush topic thing, so there shouldn't be dead air. I think we've all had time to kind of simmer over what these are going to be. But
don't worry, I can always throw some dead air.
Daryl's always In fact, that's why we call him Dead Air Daryl. So
yeah.
Even when he speaks, it's dead air somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. But let's get right to it. We'll start with we'll save our custom ones towards the end. But let's start with some of our supporting actors and best cinematography's equivalents, if you will. So let's go with best action scene. So obviously action movies are big genre. We're big fans of the genre here on the Friday Filibuster. So best action scene. And this is – we should clarify. When we talk about best, it's pretty much favorite. So we're not
right.
This isn't the New York Film Critics Circle or anything. You know, this is our personal favorite. So, Eric, why don't you kick us off? What is your – you're giving the buster to which action scene this year?
Yeah, well, there are probably a few in this movie. I don't know if it counts as an action movie per se, but there are several heart-pounding scenes in Gravity I want to give the nod to.
Very good.
Especially the opening scene with the spaceship being torn apart by the debris, and every time that Sandra Bullock has to grab something at the last possible second.
who would have known that would have received a Best Action Award, Sandra Bullock grabbing something at the last possible
second? Yeah. Not since Sandra Bullock almost drops a glass on the floor.
That's right. Very good. Excellent. You know what? You classed up this joint right away with the Alfonso Cuarón movies, so we appreciate that. Okay, Jason, what's yours?
I don't know if I would classify this as an action movie either, but the bathroom scene in The World's End was just awesome.
I got you. It's a good one.
It's an action scene.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely an action scene. Very good. Fluid flying everywhere.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Very good. Mac.
This was kind of a toughie. There's so many movies this year that were kind of good but not really spectacular, but one action scene that really blew my mind was the fight on top of the train in The Wolverine.
Ooh, I have not said – I'm due for that movie.
Well, you know, they're in Japan. They're fighting on top of the bullet train.
Ooh, is that the finale? Is that the final?
No, it's about a third of the way in or so. And they're fighting on top of the bullet train. You really get a sense of the speed and the power of this train as they're fighting on it. And it's a really intense scene.
Is it too CGI-y, or do they do a good job with it?
It is CGIE, but you know it's a superhero movie, so you gotta have to go with that.
Very good, and we're coining terms here. Right?
Now, I wanna add, next year we have to add that most CGIE movie.
That is our next category.
2014.
Next CGIE movie. Yeah, very good. Daryl, best action scene.
All right, I don't know if any of you guys saw Only God Forgives.
No, I'm familiar with it, but no.
But there is a scene in it. It has to do with a lot of, like, I mean, it's super violent and has a lot to do with Muay Thai, you know, Thai kickboxing. And there's a scene towards the end where Ryan Gosling just plain presented as a tough guy in the first place, but just plain gets his butt handed to him by this Muay Thai guy in like a Sonny Chiba style way.
Uh-huh.
All slow and, you know, short bursts, and he just gets beaten to a pulp by this guy for like 7 minutes, and it's awesome.
All right, very good. Re-endorsement. Matt, best action scene.
I do not watch many action movies. The best I could come up with was Frozen. There was an exciting moment where some dogs were, I think, some kind of dog sled.
There's, yeah.
There was action of some
sort.
Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
Good. Well done. Boy, we really spanned the gamut here. We just followed up with Frozen. Those are the kind of awards we give out on the buses. And for mine, it is the ridiculous, climactic, jumbo jet runway seven-car chase scene that capped off Fast and Furious 6. And Mac and I had seen this, and aided by the fact that we were in those – crazy ass D-box seats, you know, that are moving every which way, and the subwoofer in your back is firing constantly. And it was just, I'm just watching this scene. I'm like, they left every single dollar up on the screen. They just kept getting crazier and crazier, but in a good way. So that was a very rewarding sequence. So, all right, and that is the first category. We're making excellent time. So let's move on to a guilty pleasure. So this is a movie or show that you are hesitant about publicly liking. And Jason, we're going to start off with you. What is your guilty pleasure for 2013?
Well, I had to review the first season of the show Nashville for the site, and it is definitely prime time soap territory, but it really gets into a lot of stuff about the music business, and it's actually really intriguing. And currently in its second season, it's really starting to veer away from the soapy stuff. So I always have to like ask for forgiveness when I talk to people about liking this, but it's I'm definitely digging it.
Jason Pinnell loves Nashville. That's nice. That's coming out. Very good. Mac, guilty pleasure.
Yeah. This movie has been like showing up on everybody's worst of list for the years, and a lot of people are pegging it as worst movie of the year. It's not as bad as everyone's been saying, and that's Die Hard 5.
Good Day to Die.
Good Day to Die Hard, yeah.
Nice, Mac.
You know, it's not as stellar as the original, but that's kind of – lofty heights to shoot for, but just taken as on its own as an action movie, it was a lot of fun.
A hard R action movie. I mean, it's agree with you totally. In fact, the opening truck chase scene barely missed my cut for best action sequence. I just thought, like, because it was all done practically.
Yeah, lots of practical stunts.
Practical stunts, lots
of chaos.
Lots of chaos, really, just, I mean, that's how they kicked it off. So yeah, good one, Mac. Daryl.
All right, so after a fairly positive review on the site, not for myself, and seeing it on Netflix, like in – you know how they have the what's popular in Texas or whatever your states
yes.
are?
Yes. Oh, sure.
I just looked through that, whatever, you know. And I thought I would hate the show, and when I saw it airing on ABC, I was certain I would hate the show to the extent that I – was angered by the commercials for it. But Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. I found it to be two seasons of really pretty dang funny television.
Wow. All right.
Interesting.
Not great, but Kristen Ritter's funny, and what's his name? The guy from Dawson's Creek. Dawson. James Vanderbeek.
Okay.
Right. He plays.
That's like two guilty pleasures in one.
He plays James Vanderbeek as like a struggling former teen actor, and he's good at making fun of himself. It's pretty funny.
All right. Nice. Ring endorsement. Matt, guilty pleasure.
A lot of people said this movie was too self-indulgent and too self-referential, but I thought This Is the End was very funny all the way through, and I'm a big fan. I don't even feel guilty about it.
Of the so this is the Jonah Hill, Jonah Hill,
Seth Rogen
apocalyptic movie. Yes,
it was very inventive and funny from start to finish.
Well, mine, I'm going to take a cue from you, Matt, about as far as Frozen goes. Now, Frozen is an excellent film for sure, but my daughter is hooked on it, and every night we have to watch Let It Go sequence, you know, the song there, and to the point where it is tattooed in my brain. So I guess I would feel a little guilty admitting to people that me as a grown adult male just can't stop humming and thinking about Let It Go. It's just ridiculously infectious. The lyrics aren't even that deep, but it's superficially addictive. So it's very much like your street narcotic of choice. But yeah, Let It Go, the Frozen. Eric, guilty pleasure.
All right. Well, I'm a season behind on this show, but American Horror Story is sleazy fun. I don't know what it is.
Thinking about going back and trying to rewatch that.
Yeah, I watched Asylum, which is the second season, because it hit Netflix recently, and that is a season of TV that includes a demon possessed nun, several serial killers, and James Cromwell as a Nazi surgeon working in a Boston area mental institution run by the Catholic Church.
I obviously have to watch that.
and also Alien Abduction. It is amazingly not for everyone. But yes. I still watch.
Hold your head up high. That sounds pretty awesome. All right. Excellent. All right. Now we're going to go to our next one. Best Villain Death. Best Villain Death. Mac, start us off with this one.
Okay. This was a little tricky because a lot of villains this year survived.
True.
To make appearances in future movies. So it's hard to come up with a good villain death. So I went with the character Krueger, played by Charlton Copley from Elysium.
Oh, yes, right.
The movie is so-so, but, man, his performance is just off-the-wall crazy. I'd say at least Netflix the movie and watch it just once just to see just how totally batty he is in this role. And at the end, he goes to this big transformation to get him – turn himself all badass, and he gets this huge fight with – Matt Damon's character. And
by the way, spoilers abound in this podcast. Continue.
Okay. So he turns himself into a cyborg. And so he's all roided up with all these metal parts, and he's just going completely bonkers trying to kill Matt Damon. And it's one of our favorite things ever. It's the final bad guy fall.
Yes. Oh,
he falls from a great height. Yeah.
Nice.
So
does he splatter?
The classics.
Does he splatter? Does it?
I don't think so.
Body bounce action there? No?
I'd have to see it again.
All right. Very good. Daryl, best villain death.
Well, this was actually surprisingly hard for me, given all the horror that I watch. But nothing stood out to me. I was trying to think of something even from the ABCs of death, which has, you know, I don't know, Lord knows how many deaths, for something to stand out. But nothing stood out. So while I don't have an answer specifically, I am going to tell you what my favorite death of the year was.
All right.
Favorite death of the year is in this really dumb movie with Danny Trejo called Voodoo Possession that I just recently reviewed for the site.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the movie, in front of her two young sons, a mother climbs up onto – she's possessed clearly. But a mother climbs up a stepladder to the top of the stepladder, puts a chef knife between her teeth, and jumps off the ladder. Stabbing herself through the face with the chef's knife. Yeah, yeah. No, it was something.
Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, it was, but it was showy. You know, you got to appreciate showiness. And the rest of the movie was really god awful. But that was rad.
All right, very good, Matt. Top fat. What do you got? Best villain death.
There were a lot of unlikable characters in Hunger Games 2 who got killed, but I couldn't name any of those characters. But I didn't see many action movies. So one of the bad guys who die in Hunger Games 2.
One of the bad guys? Very good. That's a project. I like that.
It's good.
I'm going to give you some more shout-out to A Good Day to Die Hard. I always appreciate it when a bad guy gets tossed into a helicopter rotor.
Oh, yeah.
that's how the main bad guy met his end in this one. John McClane's son just kind of gave him a WWE toss off the top ropes, and he managed to hit the rotor in a nice plumage of CGI blood. So not bad. Eric, villain death.
Okay, I'm going to go with only one of the best horror films of the year, You're Next. There is a scene involving a blender in someone's head that is amazing.
All righty.
I thought about picking that one for mine.
That is spectacular. I always hate to ruin it for people because it was such a surprise when I saw it in the theater. It was like me and one other guy in the theater, and they both laughed at the same time. It was amazing.
Excellent. Jason, best villain done.
Yeah, I had a hard time with this one too, but I actually went to ABCs of Death for this one. One of the few segments that I actually liked was You for Unearthed by the British director Ben Wheatley. And the whole thing is this point of view shot of a vampire getting dug up and running from townspeople before he is just totally murdered by them. And it's kind of fun. I don't know. It's really memorable too.
I liked about a third of that. I thought about four or five of them were really terrible. A third of it was, I thought, really good, and the other 60% pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's a passing grade around here, so.
Mm-hmm. And the best are pretty awesome. The best few of those are pretty awesome little shorts.
Very nice. Well, before we get into our favorites and our worsts, we'll hit some of our custom categories here. And Daryl, we'll kick it off with you. Your category for this one was
this time around was
most unnecessary remake or sequel.
Yeah, it's a big thing for me as a horror fan. So,
all right, what do you got?
Mine personally was actually released the very first week of the year, and so it was wrapped up immediately.
All right.
And that was the latest Chainsaw Massacre, called just Chainsaw Massacre. It's the 3D one.
Okay.
It's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre equivalent of Halloween 6.
Ooh.
Wow. Ouch. We're in the rabbit hole now.
Oh, yeah. Where there's a long-lost relative in, like, a satanic cult, and, oh, my goodness, it's bad. And unnecessary, but it drives me crazy.
Do they retcon a lot of stuff?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the original? I'm assuming you're a fan of the original Chainsaw.
Original Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah.
It ranks 3
on
my list.
Impressive.
Wow.
Someday, here's a teaser for the 2014 Fight of Filibuster. We will find out what number 2 is at some point. So listen, next year.
I think you can guess what number 2 is.
Don't ruin it, Carol.
It's not going to be a big surprise. There's hardly even a point.
Stop.
Don't talk about it all the damn time.
You need a tease for 2014. Okay. Matt, what about you? What do you got? Unnecessary remake or sequel?
I didn't see it, but I can't imagine that I Spit on Your Grave Part 2 was necessary.
Okay. No, for sure. I think that's the winner.
I think that is one. So mine was – I didn't see the first one, but the second one was so terrible it retroactively made me hate the first one. Red 2. I don't know who was asking for this. I'm guessing they pee in a bag, though, because it was terrible. So Red 2, terrible, and old people.
I liked the first one.
Okay, maybe it was – but this one was so bad.
Yeah, I believe you.
So bad. Oh, I hated it. Okay, Eric, unnecessary sequel remake.
Well, this year I really loved James Wan's The Conjuring and really didn't like Insidious Chapter 2.
Oh.
Actually, just wrote the review for that the other day. It's not terrible. Wan is a good enough director that it's not just awful, but it's, you know, the first movie was pretty good. This one is just unnecessary. It just kind of makes all the mistakes sequels make. And
yeah. Bummer. Jason.
This might be unpopular, but here goes. And this is actually a movie I really liked, but I just wasn't sure why they made it, even though I liked it. And that is Monsters University.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice. I like it. I like it. First controversial pick.
Yeah. See, again, I'll just underline that I definitely liked the movie, but it was one of those – when I thought of movies that needed a sequel, I didn't really think Monsters, Inc. needed one.
Okay, unfollowing Jason on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. Love it.
Find
him. It's not a Busters unless relationships are destroyed. Mac, what do you got?
Okay, let's see. We didn't talk about it on the show, but I did see the remake of Carrie.
Oh, you did?
Ah. Oh.
I forgot that even existed.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for that. It's the worst kind of remake. It repeats everything from the original. And just occasionally adds a new thing, like here and there. But other than that, it's basically the original movie, but with new actors, and the clothes are updated to today's clothes.
Oh, that's good. Now with updated clothes.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's hair is a lot less curly than it was in 70. Yeah. yeah, it was just really disappointing. I mean, if you are going to do a new version of Carrie, you know, do something, take the basic concept of telekinetic teen and do something new with it. Don't just repeat what was done before, but that's what they did.
All right. Okay, we're on to our next custom category. This one comes from Matt. Best movie you saw this year that wasn't released this year. So you can kick us off, Matt.
Okay, I saw a documentary called Jandek on Corwood. It's about a musician from Houston, Texas, who's been putting out almost anonymous music since the late 70s, and it's fascinating and haunting. Check it out, Jandek on Corwood.
Wow, all right. Never heard of that. Well, when did that come out?
2004.
Nice. I'm going to go with Ninja 3, The Domination. I mean, it was, certainly wasn't the best of anything, but it is just delightful crap. And Mac, you can back me up on that, correct?
Oh, it's a riot.
It is fantastic. So came out in the 80s or 90s or whatever, but it was it's one of those movies, like, I can't believe I went this long in my life without being exposed to this. It's so everyone needs to watch Ninja 3, The Domination at some point. Eric.
Any movie that comes out at the end of the year is bound to not be seen by me until sometime in the next year.
Yes.
I finally got to see Django Unchained earlier this year, and I really loved it. Probably would have ended up on my top movies of the year last year if I'd seen it then. So
nice. All right. Jason.
Anime film called Summer Wars. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun, really accessible. I don't know, a great combination of action, comedy, and just, you know, a lot of feel-good moments. Good stuff.
All right. Mac.
Well, I'm kind of cheated with this one without knowing it because I've been using Netflix all year to kind of go back to a bunch of, like, classics that I haven't yet seen. So I've got a whole list of classics here. But one that really stood out was The Guns of Navarone from 1961.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Which is really great. It was a lot of fun, really just awesome action movie that could stand with any of today's action movies. And, boy, I tell you, Gregory Peck, he is, like, so suave in this movie. If I had just, like, one-tenth of his suaveness, then I'd be doing all right.
You'll get there.
Daryl.
Keep working at it.
All right. I'm going with, boy, you probably couldn't get more different than The Guns of Navarone. I'm going with a 1993 Australian splatter movie called Body Melt. That
body
was never
melt, body, melt.
Body melt.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That was never released in the States, and the only real press it got was like a 12-word thing in Fangoria that I found online. It is one of the funniest, grossest. It's like bad taste level splatter.
Nice, excellent.
More things explode, parts, people, and more body parts are enlarged ridiculously than in any movie that I've ever seen. Okay. I mean, it's awesome.
Ridiculously enlarged body parts.
Yeah, of all stripes.
Of all stripes. Fantastic. Say no more. Please say no more. Okay. Eric, we're with yours. We went in the positive direction. Best season.
Yes.
Best season.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to kick it off with Monsters University.
I like it. I
really loved that movie. I don't know if it was necessary or not, but I think they found a way to do a sequel / prequel that kind of avoided some of the problems that prequels have, where you know it's going to happen by the end. And I really love the scare games and the college setting. I thought it was really funny. And I don't know. I mean, Jason Pinnell's dead to me. That's all I have to
say.
Oh,
I love it.
I'm kidding. Oh, it's okay. No, you're fine.
Jason, retort.
Oh, wow.
And by that, I mean just what's your...
Yeah. And this definitely wasn't... This, I had a hard time with this one because I saw a fair number of sequels, but I didn't really know if any of them were that great. But I really, really liked Iron Man 3, especially when compared to Iron Man 2. I thought Shane Black taking it over, just the dialogue was great, and I don't know. It was just endlessly entertaining, I thought.
Very good.
I'm actually with you on that. I thought that was
look
good.
At that.
All right, we're back together.
Ooh,
we're back.
Yes. Friends again.
Ooh, mending.
It was a short story arc, but we didn't
it. It was compelling.
Thanks.
Compelling
thanks.
And rich. All right, Mac.
You know, with the Marvel movies, I know I'm biased because I grew up reading Marvel, so these characters are really kind of, you know, a part of my psyche. But Thor, The Dark World, I thought was just so much fun.
It was a
and
fun movie, yes.
Yeah, it was just real just fantasy adventure type stuff at its best.
I will say I liked it more than the first one. I thought I had more fun than the first one.
It was kind of, they took the first one, they built on it in good ways. And so there's a lot of action, a lot of humor, and just a good time at the movies.
Very good. Daryl.
Mine is actually Insidious 2. This is in a year of terror of dumb remakes like Evil Dead and obviously Chainsaw Massacre, whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff. Carrie, at least that one kept in tune with Insidious. Yeah, it makes sequel mistakes and all that sort of stuff, but at least it keeps in tune with the first movie and makes sense. It might not be necessary, but when has a horror sequel ever been necessary?
Very good. I like it. See, the more people, the more divergent opinions. So next year we'll have 10 people on this podcast. Matt, what do you got?
The only sequel I saw was Hunger Games 2. And,
that's a clean sweep for Hunger Games.
I wasn't bored, so it went.
That's a win. See, mine, I was a little torn, so I'm going to kind of – I kind of cop out. I'm going to give you two movies, but the same actor. So two Vin Diesel movies, two Vin Diesel sequels. So Fast 6, which I think is my favorite of the whole series. I don't know if that's saying a ton, but definitely the one I enjoyed the most. And then Riddick, I want to give a shout-out to. And mainly because Riddick wasn't, like, a great movie, but compared to – I'm playing the comparison game that you are, Jason, but compared to Chronicles of Riddick, which is just, like, a bloated mess that I barely remember.
Yeah.
It was a relief to kind of refocus on what made the franchise kind of cool, which was Pitch Black and, you know, the monster movie, the indie spirit, the R-rated stuff. And it was just a nice return to form for that. Not a great movie by any stretch, but a nasty little B-movie thriller more along the lines of Pitch Black. So I appreciated that. So
nice.
All right. Okay, so let's go with Jason, biggest surprise of the year. Kick us off. What was your biggest surprise of the year?
Okay, so for the site, I had to review the first season of Revolution. And it wasn't like a terrible show, but it just, especially by the end, it just was so formulaic and I did not dig it at all. But then the second season came along and I kind of felt like I had to watch it for some reason. And I did. And it's great. They just really tightened up the story. The characters are better, and they're just taking it into some really weird places that are awesome. So the second season of Revolution is my pick.
All right, nice. Mac?
This didn't make my list. Something fell through the cracks here, so you've ambushed topic to me.
Nice. Do you want me to return to you?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to – that's the biggest surprise. So he's just a surprise.
Topic.
So we will return to Mac. Daryl,
biggest surprise. All right. I think likewise with Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. I mean, things I watch are pretty well known on this podcast, and romantic comedy is not one of them. But for some reason, I watched Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yes, good movie.
And I was delighted by it. I've watched it like three times since then. It's fantastic.
So there's hope for you yet. Is that what you're saying?
Nope.
And we're going to we'll crack that ice-cold, dark heart of yours. Is that what you're saying? Melt now? Okay.
Give her a shot.
All right. Matt, what do you got? Surprise of the year?
I was surprised by The Bling Ring because it's a very interesting story, and it was turned into the dullest movie I'd seen in a long time. I'm getting very tired of Sofia Coppola's aimless meanderings.
Been there right. Since the Virgin Suicides.
Yeah.
All right. Mine was the two coolest shows I watched on TV were Cinemax original series. That was my biggest surprise.
I'm glad you didn't put those up as guilty pleasures.
No, I'm not.
Proud.
I'm proud. Yeah, I'm proud. That's good. I am. Banshee and Strike Back Season 2. So Banshee Season 1 and Strike Back Season 2 are just fantastic. Like, they're not guilty pleasures because they're legitimate, like they're well done. And obviously, yeah, so, I mean, there's some excesses, of course, but they're actually like, there's talent behind, it's well done. The stories are cool and, it just great stuff. So I was pretty surprised by that. Eric?
I'm going to go with The Heat, which is a movie that I probably would not have watched if not, you know, hadn't heard some good things about it. But I probably laughed harder at that movie than anything else I watched this year.
And so
Melissa McCarthy, Sandra Bullock movie.
Yes.
And it is Melissa McCarthy's put downs are amazing in that movie. It's like Peter Capaldi from In the Loop stuff. It's pretty amazing.
Nice. I really loved it.
Well, Sandra Bullock is your Hunger Games 2 this year.
Absolutely. Sandra Bullock.
How did While You Were Sleeping not make the best movie you saw?
She's also the answer to your topic, Dave. Oh, okay. She's not as kidding, of course.
Okay. I love it. That joke will pay off in a couple minutes.
It will. Just remember that. File that away, folks.
File that one away. That'll come back.
That away.
Okay, Mac, did you get one?
This is the category where I would put This Is the End with okay. Seth Rogen and all them. I went in with really low expectations. I was expecting just, you know, self-aware, self-indulgent crap, but there was a lot of laughs in it. Especially Danny McBride really stole the movie. Every scene he was in was just a riot. So that's my pick.
Very nice. All right, Mac, since we're on you, why don't we do yours? Your best hero moment.
Yeah, we talked about villain death, so I thought the other side of the coin would be the best hero moment when the hero gets
that, you know. I didn't see that email.
Oh, you did not see that email?
Oh.
Excellent. The show prep remains. Well,
right. I can't wait to find out which topic Dave didn't send to me.
That's true. Best use of algebra in a movie.
I got it. Okay.
Actually, you're lucky, Eric. It's a best Sandra Bullock moment. So.
Oh, excellent. The answer is all of them.
All right. So we'll let Daryl stew on his. Mac, go ahead. What's your best hero moment?
All right. For mine, I went to the world of video games. And in Bioshock Infinite, when Elizabeth Comstock, she's a side character, but she's kind of one of the heroes. She has the ability to open tears in the fabric of reality, which comes in real handy. And at one point, when the mad scientists are experimenting on her, she gets her revenge on them. She opens this huge tear in reality where on the other side there's a tornado in like a cornfield. And the tornado blows right through the mad scientist lab and just kills everybody, destroys everything. And it was just – and then she's – Elizabeth is standing there right in the middle of the tornado controlling it all. It was really badass. So.
Very nice. Daryl, you got anything yet?
Skip me.
Skip you. Matt, what do you got? Best hero moment?
The editor of Now You See Me was my hero when he finally ended the movie and rolled the credits.
I love the negative turn this is all taking. Going back to the world of Banshee from Cinemax, best hero moment, Lucas Hood, who is our anti-hero. He's a criminal who has assumed the identity of a sheriff. And he's kind of there's an episode where an MMA star comes to town and he turns out to be a scumbag rapist. So Lucas Hood confronts him at the end, and for the next 10 minutes, it is just a brutal beatdown, just a brutal fight that ends with Lucas breaking this guy's arm and bones splintering, and he walks off all bloody, and he just throws a one-liner at the deputies who are staring agog at him. So it's just it was a fantastic moment. So Lucas Hood beating the tar out of an MMA rapist, that is my hero moment. Eric. Hero moment.
All right, well, along the same lines as yours, Dave.
Of course.
The end of Frozen.
Yes.
Where the hero turns out to not necessarily be who you'd expect if you watched a lot of past Disney movies. I think that's a movie that I think maybe redefines what a Disney princess can be, which I think is cool considering I have a daughter who loves Disney princesses. So.
There you go. Jason.
Gonna go with Iron Man 3, Tony Stark's armorless assault on Mandarin's compound. Doesn't really stand out in a lot of ways, but I just liked how he kind of went back to basics and, just used science to take down some guys.
So, science.
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 Hero of 2003. Science. Daryl, you got one?
I got one, kind of.
It's okay.
All right, so I can't really talk about it because, Dave, you're behind the times. We've already established that I can't talk about this.
Yes.
But my favorite character on the show for a long time was Hank, the brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And his arc from the start of this year to his inevitable – I found to be a great moment for a hero for an ancillary – or not an ancillary, but a supporting character in the show.
Very vague. One wonderful and vague.
Has to be vague.
Yeah, inevitable.
Your fault, Dave.
Inevitable.
I could have just said it. But
I know. Take pride in the fact that everybody who's listening to this probably knows what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm talking about it, except for you, and yeah. That's just a shame.
All right. Mine is Worst Smell of 2013. Interpret that as you wish. Eric, go.
All right, I'm going to go with the convention of witches and Hansel and Gretel witch hunters.
A lot of magical BO, you're thinking there?
If they smell as bad as they look, then...
machines.
And that's a movie you liked, right?
I did like that movie. I think it's probably the best Sam Raimi movie of 2013.
Nice. All right. We'll check it out. Jason.
Yeah.
Worst smell was whatever The Rock was cooking in Pain and Gain.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
Mac.
Did Hollywood produce a lot of new smells this year?
That's up to you to decide.
There's really nowhere else to mention this, so I'm mentioning it here. From the world of comics, the Superior Spider-Man, which is Dr. Octopus's brain inhabiting Peter Parker's dead body and animating it to become the new Spider-Man, which is so awful in so many ways.
Yes. And, that sounds terrible.
It is. It's really awful. And we're supposed to get behind him.
Six comic books.
Yeah, so you got to root for it, but you're still rooting for Spider-Man as a protagonist here?
Yeah, we're supposed to believe he's the good guy now, and it's so completely wrong. So yeah,
there are a smelly dead Spider-Man reanimated. Right. Daryl,
I'm going with Community season 4.
Oh, low blow.
Yep.
Although I will say that the first two episodes of season 5 were very promising.
That's true.
Yes.
And more on that to come in 2014.
Yay! Like that in Hellraiser every episode.
Matt, what do you got? Worst smell of 2013?
Free Birds really stunk. It's an outrageously bad movie from start to finish with no imagination or cleverness.
All right, very good. And I'm going to go with when the dwarves had dead fish dumped on them in the barrel. Thinking unwatched dwarf hide with fish does not equal. Equal good smells. Okay, now we're into the home stretch of our award season here, where we kind of crown our favorites of the year. But we'll start on the negative with the worst. So the year's worst, and that could be a movie, TV, or a Blu-ray or DVD release. And God knows, I'm sure a good amount of us have succumbed to some terrible movie releases here. So Jason, why don't you start us off with this one?
Had to review a movie called Christmas Angel.
You win. Next.
And to make things worse, the packaging had glitter all over it. I just had glitter explode in my face.
Man. Oh, that's fantastic.
Never hire Tobias Fuque. Wow, that sounds terrible.
Was terrible.
That's a movie that hates you.
That does hate you. It might as well include smallpox on it. You know? Mac.
This is the biggie.
Yes.
This is the big one. Definitely nothing this year was more of a disappointment to me than Man of Steel.
Oh, and we the whole year – we've gone away from this, but no, Matt goes there. Okay, big disappointment, Man of Steel.
Huge
worst, wow.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was so irate walking out of that movie, and it's just, I don't know. Trying to put into words, like, how disappointing it was is difficult. I'm going to take a moment here and go back from Man of Steel to Shakespeare's Hamlet.
Yes.
And in Hamlet, the main character stands up on stage, and he asks, to be or not to be? That's his dilemma, right? Because if he gets his revenge to be, well, he'll probably get killed for it. But if he doesn't get his revenge not to be, then his father's murder goes unpunished. And that's the dilemma, and that's drama. Fast forward to Man of Steel, and Clark Kent has a similar dilemma. If he saves people and reveals his powers to the world, well, his whole life will change and the whole world will change. But if he doesn't use his powers and save people, then people are going to die and awful things are going to happen. And that's his dilemma. That's drama. But then that's taken away from him because Zod comes down from space and basically forces him to put on the cape and the red boots and be Superman. So he doesn't get to make a choice. And I think that right there is the heart of why the movie is so disappointing, because he never makes a choice. He never makes a decision throughout the entire movie.
Now you watch till the end of the movie, right? There's a little bit of a choice he makes at the end, but we won't go. We won't get into it because
even that, I think they're trying to set it up so that his action, he didn't have a choice; he had to do it, and so right. At least it's open to interpretation.
Well, the favorite movies will be a lot of fun when we get to that. So let's
really?
Let's move on to very good, very good, very valid. Daryl, what do you got? Yours worst for you.
Okay, this is going to be probably pretty meaningless to most people, most listeners out there. last year in 2012, I reviewed the Blu-ray for the Blue Angel, Der Blue Angel, whatever, Der Blue Angel or whatever it is, the Joseph von Sternberg movie that introduced Marlene Dietrich to the world. It's a fantastically funny, dark comedy, great songs. It's great. It's fantastic. And they fully restored the German version, but it was bare bones. And I wrote in that review that I can't believe it's bare bones because – or the only reason I can believe it's bare bones is because they're going for some crappy double dip sometime next year. And sure enough, 6 months later, they release it again. The only selling point is it has like two special features – and the English version, which is the German actors speaking in thick German accents. You can't understand a word they're saying. And the print wasn't restored. And it's an old VHS. It's a print. It's an old public domain print. And it looks like somebody kicked it. It's like $15 more expensive. And it's the biggest ripoff that I have ever seen. Not only was I right in my review that it was just a cheap attempt at a double dip, but it's just shoddy, and it just irritated me.
But did it come with glitter?
It did not come with glitter, and unfortunately, I can't win with a movie that most people have never seen.
That's but, okay. You know, the winner is you. Don't worry. You're still a winner.
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Matt, biggest worst of 2013.
I'm just going to say Francis Ha. It was too arty and pretentious, but I'm extremely biased because I made a movie called Local Legends, which is also in black and white and similar themes and is also arty and pretentious, so I felt threatened.
Chris, I ripped you off. That's,
like
that's,
a lot of, I like garbage. The honesty, professional, like professional rivalry, very good. Not at all. See, I was torn between Battle of the Year, which I've talked about, the terrible Josh Holloway dance movie, which sucked. But I'm going to go with a late edition that just crossed the finish line. In fact, I just hit sent on the review, but it was released in 2013. It's called Badges of Fury. So I'm always on the lookout for badass Hong Kong action movies because there's a lot of great, you know, diamonds, you know, under the radar gems you can find. This one had Jet Li in it, and it was, you know, the cover promised me two cops, one murderer, all kinds of craziness. So I pop it in, and it's 2 minutes in when I realize that I'm looking at the dumbest comedy in the world.
Oh, no.
So it is not an action movie, it is a comedy. I kind of was alerted to the fact when there's a scene of a thin man dancing with a large woman, and she runs to jump into his arms, and he freezes with a goofy grin on his face, and she lands on him, and it pulls back, and he's like, through the floor, because, you know, she's big and fat, and she's sitting on his shoulders. Jeez. And it rips off Tim Burton's Batman films, because the murderer is killing people with these grins on their face. But it's just nonstop, stupid slapstick, and Jet Li is either wire foo or it's CGI-y, to coin a term we just used here. And then the final battle, he's fighting a guy who was resuscitated from a nursing home or a hospital bed, and they fight in some really overwrought scene, and it ends up with, I don't even know how it happens, but Jet Li separates into eight separate Jet Lis and kicks the guy in the face. It's the dumbest crap. It's the dumbest crap. And his partner, there's a scene where he goes undercover as a cross-dressing Scotsman. So there you go. Makes no sense and stupid. I know that sounded funny, but it's not funny. Trust me. It's terrible. Eric, worst.
All right, worst. This might be controversial. I know a lot of people like this, and I don't know why. Room 237 pretends to be a movie
that
reveals you know, the hidden secrets behind The Shining.
Insane.
It's insane.
So
and
silly.
It's insane. The problem is that the director provides no context. You know, we don't. It's just a bunch of insane people talking about insane stuff for the length of the movie without any kind of rational voice or.
Yeah, you might as well just call it tinfoil half the movie.
Pretty much. I found it infuriating, and I it sounded so cool, but it's really not. I didn't like it at all.
I was amused by it. Everything you're saying is exactly right, but my reaction was amusement.
I think that's true for, I think it's true for like half an hour, 45 minutes, but not the amount of time that it just
you know, the length of the movie is just too much.
Yeah, it goes nowhere.
I'll tell you this. I was so amused that I went. The guy that's got the thing about the Apollo mission stuff.
Oh, the moonlight. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I went and looked him up, and he's the only person on the internet ever talking about what they're talking about there. Which, spoiler alert, is that Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landings, and The Shining was his confession to this fact. That's bizarre. But the dude has like 25,000 words on this subject. He goes down the rabbit hole like almost nobody I've ever seen. And I probably spent 3 hours reading his work. total amusement.
The final puzzle piece lands into place.
You know, you wonder why crazy people can't be more pithy. I wonder when insane people have to ramble.
You know, pithiness would go a long way in helping.
I'm more than willing to listen to your crazy theory about why aliens are controlling your dog. If you just can do it in 2 minutes, two
That's
cents.
Right. Yeah. You know, Twitter might be the best thing ever happened to crazy people. You know, 60 characters. See what happens, or not. Maybe it's the worst thing to happen at all. Maybe. Okay, I think. So now we're gonna go positive. We got our final three categories are our personal favorites, the stuff that really grabbed us. So Mac, why don't you kick us off with your favorite TV show of 2013?
TV show, okay. This one's I know a lot of under the radar for a lot of people, but I've been championing it as much as I can. It's Gravity Falls, which is an animated series on the Disney Channel. But don't let Disney Channel scare you away.
That's like me watching romantic comedies, man.
Don't let the Disney Channel thing scare you away, because it's the most un-Disney thing that you can imagine being on the Disney Channel. The premise is that, you know, these kids are living in a small town where there's creepy, mysterious, supernatural stuff going on. They investigate every week. So pretty simple setup, but the comedy is so outrageous and so outlandish, and it goes into all these weird, surreal, absurd storylines that you never predict, and it's also, you know, very witty and very sharp and just very, very funny. It's like I said in my I reviewed the first six episodes that came out on DVD, and I said that it's like getting a Simpsons Halloween special every week.
Wow. You know,
it's that good.
All right. Nice. Daryl, what do you got? Favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show of this year was a very close race.
Yeah, and feel free to talk. Yeah, if you want to talk about your runners up, that's fine too.
I think my winner. See, I don't really know. I've got a 1A and a 1B.
Let's do it. Let's hear it. That's fine.
So my 1A is Breaking Bad. That was my first thought.
Sure.
Because those final episodes were so freaking phenomenal. I can't even wrap my head around that TV could be that good.
All right.
I
don't undersell it or anything.
No. Oh, it's
I'm sure it's gonna be.
Famous. I didn't. My 1B is the fourth season of Arrested Development.
Because
of how absolutely ambitious it was to try to make what's essentially a 7.5-hour episode of television.
Yeah.
All wrapped around and with, you know, multiple storylines and, you know, different angles and
payoffs like five episodes down the road. Right.
Yeah.
Once you start to get into the repetition of scenes and start to get the sequence of events, it really starts to gel.
And you know, that's something that, you know, that's very interesting too, because obviously that was kind of controversial that season, you know, because it was different, obviously, and I think they were constricted by times. But I think we talked about this. It's kind of brilliant in its own way. Even though there are definitely some. I mean, the George Michael episode is one of my favorite Arrested Development episodes. Anyway. I just think it's so hilarious.
The reveal of learning why George Michael is such a terrible kisser.
Yes. Oh, man.
It's one of the funniest things in the program, in any episode of the program. That is just brilliant. It's a complete analysis of his crappy kissing.
Absolutely. I'm glad
so humiliating.
I forgot about that. But good selection.
I'm gonna change my biggest surprise of the year to Arrested Development season 4 came out and I forgot.
That is a bad
habit. I liked it, but right. I can't believe I forgot that.
I know. I mean, that's kind of like the founding documents of this TV show. You know?
Yeah, it's the Busters, of course. It's the friggin' Busters.
Yeah, it is Busters. Yeah, what the heck?
Wow.
It's like the first. We had two Arrested Development references, so that's right. So. Very good, Daryl. Thank you for carrying that torch. Matt, what do you got? Favorite TV show?
Favorite TV show is The Mindy Project. Very funny, very well written, great characters, and it's got heart.
Nice. You and my wife both, if she were here, she would agree with you. So.
Good.
Whatever that's worth to you. My favorite TV show, again, I threw out a couple of my favorites. Obviously, Banshee was a good one. Justified was just hypnotic this year, I thought. But I'm going to go with Strike Back Season 2, another Cinemax show. But just versus Season 1, which is a bunch of different smaller shows, and the excess has really gotten in the way of, like, decent storytelling. It just seemed more over the top. This one focused on one long mission that took place over 13 episodes. It was very much like 24, but on roids. But they weren't slaves to the real time thing for sure. It just felt like this huge sprawling adventure. They're all over the place. Production value is sky high, and some just legit great writing. So good, in fact, that the finale involves a ticking bomb. Right, the emaciated cliche, and they found a cool way to do it that was legitimately thrilling. So, I mean, the highest praise possible for Strike Back Season 2, I have to say. Eric, what do you got?
Well, the correct answer is Breaking Bad.
Correct.
Yes. But much like Daryl, I also have a second answer because first one's so obvious. And much like Matt, my answer airs Tuesday nights on Fox. I'm going to go with New Girl.
All right.
Which actually, and it's like, it started as kind of like a forgettable, not like, not great show the first season. Somehow it's become the show that I laugh hardest at every week, and I don't know how that happened.
Nice.
I know that Jake Johnson, who plays Nick, is hilarious. He was great in the movie Drinking Buddies this year.
Oh, yeah.
And things. But him and I forget his last name. The guy plays Schmidt. Like their interaction, it's not even about Zooey Deschanel anymore. And I never hated Zooey Deschanel, but just the interaction between these characters makes me laugh so hard.
Like, would you say, have they kind of like risen to be, and they were kind of an ensemble group and kind of the supplementary, supplementary to Zooey Deschanel's character. Have they kind of arisen in prominence in the show?
I think so. I think everyone's at least on equal footing now. It's not like Zooey Deschanel show and they're just the supporting characters anymore at all.
Okay. I had heard like lamentations that the actor who plays Schmidt was screwed over by not getting Emmy consideration.
Like maybe
he's just so good at he's just really
he really is. I think I prefer Jake Johnson to him, but not by much. I mean they're so funny. I'm putting it out there, it's not really my favorite show, but it's so good that I want people to at least – I want to get it, – it's kind of the Sandra Bullock of Fox TV show.
I love it.
It's credit. It's due where it's due.
And some people say the Sandra Bullock of Fox TV shows is the Hunger Games 2 of the Sandra Bullock of Fox.
I think that's
pithy.
It's the nail on the head.
Nice. Good. Jason, what do you got?
I liked a lot of TV this year, but the one show that really rose above all of them, I think, was Justified, definitely.
Nice call.
And I've liked all the seasons, and I liked the second season a lot more than you did, Dave, I know that, but, like, this season was just, the writing was so good, and I loved how they sort of injected the usual formula with the whole mystery of the Drew Thompson character, the parachutist from the beginning.
Right.
And just it's so good. And like
and then the Boyd Raylan stuff remains the greatest character work going on in TV now, I think.
Yeah. And one of the things I always loved about the show too is you see these minor characters early on in like the first season and they just keep showing up.
Yeah.
Keep showing up and they keep building them and it's I love it and I just can't recommend that show enough.
Yeah, towards that home stretch, we had to physically restrain ourselves from like watching four episodes in a row.
You know, absolutely, absolutely.
That addictive. But yeah, great. That was like that would probably be my 1B too. So
yeah,
to be honest, good call. All right, Daryl, why don't you? We got two more left here. Favorite DVD or Blu-ray release of the year?
Okay, I actually just talked about this a couple of weeks ago, so I'll be brief. But in what could be arguably the best spaghetti western ever made, Sergio Salima's The Big Gun Down. Finally gets a proper home video release that it never got, which so I'll just run this down real fast what this Blu-ray DVD combo provides. Fully restored American version, U.S. version of the movie running 96 minutes with all the commentaries and junk. DVD edition, whatever. Second Blu-ray featuring the original Italian version at 110 minutes that was never released in America until now. A third disc of the CD soundtrack, which is arguably Ennio Morricone's finest soundtrack that he ever wrote. And on the Italian Blu-ray, it comes with an isolated score track that comes with its own subtitled commentary track detailing the changes to the score, analyzing the score, and talking about how the cuts to the American version affected it. And for a spaghetti Western fan, as I am, you couldn't hand me a better Christmas present.
Nice.
Ever. It's an amazing release, and it's like $24.
All right. Sounds like money well spent. I'm a guess. Money well spent.
Well, I reviewed it.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Postage well spent.
So, yes. Talk to Mike about that.
Yes.
I don't know.
Matt, what do you got? What's your favorite Blu-ray DVD release of the year?
I don't know if it's on Blu-ray DVD, but it's on Netflix now. It's the first season of Marin, the Marc Maron IFC.
I just started watching that.
And it's really cool because you can watch from season one, from episode 1 through 10, you can see him learning how to act. And by the end of the season, he's real good. And the story becomes more, you know, the overall story becomes more and more interesting. I'm very excited for season 2 now.
He just had a stand-up special arrive on Netflix as well that is excellent.
Yes, I agree. I've listened to all his podcasts. He's great.
Yeah, I was only vaguely familiar with him until that stand-up special came up, and I was duly impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, I'm contractually obligated for this selection. There really is only one for me, but that's Willow, obviously, on Blu-ray. That came out earlier this year. But that's actually – and obviously it'd probably get my vote even if it was like the VHS transfer on a disc with no label. But still, I will say that it is actually a legit cool – Blu-ray. There's new stuff. Ron Howard does a nice intro. Warwick Davis has a little walkthrough on some video diaries. And there's some deleted scenes that are catnip for Willow fans, but they're worth watching, including an incredibly disturbing Fish Boy sequence, which I mean, they were pushing the boundaries of the PG rating with General Kale getting impaled, you know, up close and personal and whatnot. The Fish Boy would have pushed it into NC-17. He is disturbing. So, but. The only lament is no commentary track, which you figure would have been kind of a no-brainer for this. But regardless, great Blu-ray, something obviously I've been waiting since the technology was first unveiled in CES, whatever, 1997 or something. So very excited about that. So Willow gets my nod. Eric.
There are a lot of great Blu-rays this year, but I'm going to give a nod to a DVD release, the Mystery Science Theater 25th Anniversary set. Shout Factory puts out three really great Mystery Science Theater collections every year, but this their newest one had not the regular four episodes, but six episodes, including the ones that transitioned Joel to Mike, plus a ton of bonus features. I think like 2.5 hours worth of bonus features, including like an hour-long documentary looking back at the show's history. It's really, really, really good way to celebrate the show's quarter cent. What's the year? It's like quarter cent. It's 25 years. That's the one.
All right.
I don't know. I don't know. Quarter.
Quarter full.
Quarter full.
Quarter full. Quarter full. Yeah, no. That's whatever. Okay. Excellent. Good one, Jason.
Criterion put out a just absolutely fantastic Blu-ray release of the Danish film Babette's Feast, which I really like the movie a lot, and the transfer is just perfect. But the real thing that just made me love it was, it just comes with like hours and hours and hours of extra footage, and it comes with a book, that has the short story that the movie's based off of, plus this huge essay. So just putting a book in there, man, you got me.
So you don't, no action figure, right? No Pacific Rim like action figure.
That's in the super
yeah,
bonus.
Sure. So. Mac, what's your favorite release?
Yeah, there was a really great Blu-ray release this year of the 1953's House of Wax with Vincent Price. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic movie. Really great to sort of rediscover it on this Blu-ray. The restoration work is just impeccable. I mean, it's, you know, the colors and everything, and the atmosphere just really just pops off the screen. And tons of bonus features, including a whole other movie, which is the Mystery of the Wax Museum from the 30s. And
That's cool.
Yeah. So just basically a really great movie given just the A-list treatment.
Very nice. And with that, we are at our final category. So take your time, finish some of your hot ham water as you get ready to wrap it up. But this is our – this is
smack of ham.
your cornballer, right? Get your cornballer fired up.
I actually recently read an article about people figuring out how to make cornballs.
Yes.
Yeah, trying to and if you need to freshen up, get some glisten, right? Use some glisten there.
So, who left the cap off my effing glisten?
So here we are, the final category for the Busters. That is the favorite movie. So your favorite movie of the year. Again, not necessarily the best one, but the one that just grabbed you the most. And Matt, why don't you kick us off? What's your favorite movie of 2013?
I love the movie Side Effects, directed by Steven Soderbergh. From start to finish, it was fun and thrilling and the best neo-noir type movie I'd seen since Body Heat from the 80s.
Oh, wow. That's a good recommendation. I'll have to check that out. Always been mixed on Soderbergh.
This is pure cinematic fun and thrills. He's not getting too arty. It's just popcorn fun.
Nice. For mine, well, let me preface this by saying, let me tell you a bit about my pal Mac McIntyre. We tend to share very similar tastes. Wouldn't you say that, Mac? We've emerged from A Good Day to Die Hard, right, and said, well, that wasn't a bad movie. We've emerged from Battle Los Angeles and say, that was a good time. We've emerged from Battleship, wanted to kill ourselves, right? So it's been pretty – I think, we share similar tastes, but it's fascinating to see how on polar opposites we are on this film. So your worst of the year is my best of the year. So Man of Steel is my favorite movie of the year, and I think I've – gushed about it on my review and whatnot, so I won't rehash it. But it's just something that grabbed me. It's gotten better with repeat viewings. I've watched it, with my brother-in-law. He was up here. We watched it. My wife, we saw it recently. And it's just something that it just really just worked for me in a big way. Like, the stuff that I like about Superman resonated with me there. I just loved it. There was a cost to a lot of this stuff. I don't know. I won't regurgitate it. But it was and I totally understand the mixed nature of it. I wouldn't call anyone's opinion invalid at all. But for me, Man of Steel just delivered for me. And I really had high expectations. But it just grabbed me somehow. It's really got me going as far as the character and the mythology and all that. So there you go, Man of Steel. So, and for that, we'll take any Man of Steel bickering offline, Mac, until the next trip down to Papagino's or something. We'll hash this out like men. We'll get over this. But, there you go. There's the divergence of opinions we treasure. So, Eric, what was your favorite movie of the year?
All right, this is definitely falls under the more times I see it, the more I like it. And this is a movie that I assumed that I was going to love from the beginning. My most anticipated movie of the year delivered on all levels, and that's Edgar Wright's The World's End, which I think only gets better. And I've seen it more than half a dozen times at this point. I watched it a few times in the week that I reviewed it. And then a few weeks later, I pulled it out. My sister was here for Christmas Eve. We watched it. And I loved it all over again. I think it might be the best of the Cornetto trilogy. I think it's,
right. Oh, hi. Well, that's,
I think it's the most interesting things to say. I think Simon Pegg gives by far his best performance. I think it's funny. I think the casting is perfect. I really love that movie.
Nice.
So much. So.
All right. Jason, favorite of the year.
Well, I'm going to get arty and pretentious on you guys.
Drop it. Bring it.
Okay, boom. Here
we
go.
We already talked about Babette's Feast.
Yeah.
That
was a real popcorn. That was a real popcorn.
That was a real popcorn. Sit down with the 3D glasses on. There was a movie released about 10 years ago called Primer?
Yeah.
Primers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that. Following the, I don't want to say non-career, but the director, Shane Carruth, he's just kind of been off the radar for about a decade. Yeah. But then he released this movie this year called Upstream Color that it's definitely one of the most polarizing movies I've seen because people seem to either really love it or hate it, but I just loved it. It was hypnotic, and trying to sum up the plot is kind of impossible without, you kind of have to go to Wikipedia and read through it, But it's just an insane movie. And one of the things I think that I love the most about it is that Kareth made all of it on his own. He wrote it, directed, did like a lot of the editing, did the soundtrack. He basically made the whole thing outside of the Hollywood system and released it on his own. And it's just, I loved it.
It's great. It really is good. So I bought it on Blu-ray. It came out on Netflix like a week later, and I did not care because it was – it just felt so good for him making that thing. It's really amazing.
Nice. All right. What's the name of it again?
Upstream Color.
Upstream? Upstream?
Yeah, color? Upstream mm-hmm. Color.
All right. Nice. Mac, what do you got?
Actually, I'm signing right along with Eric here because my pick was also The World's End.
Oh, look at that. Consensus. We're building consensus.
And this is great. I really enjoyed it when I saw it at the theater, and then upon getting the Blu-ray, I too have been one who's just been watching it over and over again, picking up new little details every time. You know, it's just really funny. The performances are great. The fight scenes are just ridiculously over the top in the best way. And there is a bit in the movie where the five guys are walking down the street and trying to look nonchalant while the mysterious people in the town are watching them. And it's set to the tune of Whiskey Bar by The Doors. And all five of the guys are, like, walking in time to the beat of the music.
Nice.
And that scene, that is just pure movie magic. It's just, like, that's the movie really comes alive right there. And you forget you're watching the movie. You're right in the scene with those guys. So
very nice.
I should add that was my runner-up.
Well, oh, good.
Definitely.
I too, enjoyed it. A great deal. I need to see it a second time, actually.
It's one of those movies. The first time I saw it, I liked it. I didn't love it. It took a couple times.
Yeah, I think it might be the same with me. I need to kind of revisit that. I think, you know, my wife loves the trilogy and, you know, loves all that the Edgar Wright stuff. So I need to use that as an excuse to take another stroll with it. So, Daryl, what do you got?
All right, I've already mentioned this, but it is as Jason's issue a controversial movie, a polarizing movie, I should say, and shockingly badly reviewed for what I witnessed. And so my favorite movie of the year, and let me preface this by saying that I actually have to do research for this podcast, not the other ones.
Okay,
not the 51 other ones.
Right, right.
But this one, because I only see like maybe 8-9 movies a year that's made the same year we're talking about. and so my pickings are slim, but my choice is Only God Forgives. It's exceptionally violent to an uncomfortable degree that is when you can sort of get into my stomach, I start to when I start to feel stuff, you know, it's something. And seeing a guy get ribbed, I guess is the best way to say it, with a sword.
Yikes.
Cut to where all of his ribs, like the whole, it's like you're looking at a side of, it's like you're looking at a cow's ribs.
Wow.
It's really graphic, but it's also mesmerizingly beautiful. And the cinematography reminds me of Suspiria, which I mentioned in this podcast again. but it reminds me of Suspiria, and it's just a mesmerizing movie to me. I've watched it a number of times since then, and just the pace and the coloring and the cinematography just completely kills me.
All right. Well, so to speak, I guess.
Well, yeah. It's
a... Very good. And that's quite a selection. So that wraps up. This...
Oh, did Only God Forgives wrap up the
book? That is.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Okay.
We end with Side of Beef.
That's right. Quick topic. Well, best dance number of Frozen.
Dad. Go.
if we had the rights.
Jeez Louise.
If we had the rights, the Disney rights, I'd play to Let It Go. I don't think we do. So just look it up on YouTube and let it get stuck in your head. So, all right, that is it. That is our edition of The Busters.
70 minutes.
Not too bad, right? I think not too bad. Seeing that we've spent 70 minutes just talking about really stupid stuff over the past year, and we would like to do a retrospective sometime, but let's be honest, it's too much work, so we're not going to do that. So this is kind of a retrospective. So a lot of cool stuff here. So I got a few things on my watch list I want to check out thanks to the recommendations here. And I think number one is rewatching Arrested Development Season 4 because I almost forgot it came out too.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. Unbelievably brilliant. So Eric, Jason, Mac, Daryl, and Matt, thank you so much. I'm sure we will hear from these characters again in 2014. Mac, take us away for the last podcast, sort of 2013.
Let's boo-boo.